The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
The issue of our children spending a year in Israel is ostensibly, very, really a no-brainer. The last, few decades, yeshiva graduates have been going to Israel, and the successes have certainly been very significant and, very, very commendable. But over the years, people have begun to realize that there are a lot of dangers there, serious dangers besides just the security issues. And those are the, sudden freedom that they all have, the difficulties and the challenges and the temptations that are available to our children, oftentimes without anybody being aware of really what they're indulging in. The experienced or savvy amongst us have a sense that even a yeshiva or a seminary that has a dormitory supervision can never really compete with what could be done at home, and even that's not doing too great these days. So there are serious issues, and it probably makes the most sense to be familiar with the issues and to address the issues before our children take off, so that we could at least know that we've done everything possible to attempt to limit the challenges and the difficulties that they're going to face. And the truth is that this year in Israel can be the greatest thing that ever happened to them. Ki mitzion teitzei Torah, that the real inspiration and the real renewed and enhanced commitment to Yahadus certainly happens there for so many. On the other hand, the better that we can prepare for the experience and be aware of the difficulties and structure situations that can be helpful to avoid some of these difficulties is certainly a very wise move on the part of any parent. So therefore, what we've done is just analyzed a number of the major issues based on years of experience. I think personally, I've been visiting the kids that go to Israel yearly for probably the last 30 years and watched, how it used to be and how it is today. And there are some differences and there are some difficulties, and it's certainly wise to be on top of things. So we put together, actually it's printed as well, a list of basic issues that we should consider before sending our children to Israel. So this is, I'd like to just share with you some of these issues at this time. First of all, being very far away and being in a situation where we really don't know what's going on. In fact, even with the advent of modern technology, which makes it so much easier to be in communication, it also makes it much more difficult to know where your child is. They used to have to call from a landline phone and you had some sense of where they were hanging out. Today, there's no clue. So as much as it's somewhat easier, it's somewhat more shady, I guess. So I guess really the most critical ingredient is probably the openness of the relationship that we have with our children. And that's not going to start in the airport on the way to Israel. Rather, that has to start 10 years ago. But it's never too late. But certainly it should be something that we fine-tune for months, if not years, before they're ready to leave. And an open relationship is something that's always a major tool in good parenting and in results that we want to see from our children. But it's a delicate type of a thing, because there's a balance between creating an environment in the home where our children can feel comfortable enough telling us what's going on, and even if some of their issues and some of their behaviors or misbehaviors are not that which we would appreciate or approve of. And on the other hand, not creating an atmosphere where anything goes and we condone everything that they do, and, you know, it's just a free-for-all. So it's a balance that we have to strike, but it's a very important balance. A balance between that under no circumstances, no matter what they tell us, no matter what we know about them, will it ever reflect on them or on our relationship, our love, our involvement, our caring, our commitment to them. Rather, if there is something that's inappropriate, it's not the person, but it's rather the situation or the event or the occurrence that is to be addressed, and it doesn't in any way impact upon our relationship. It's easier said than done. Kids don't often perceive that we feel this way. It's like the kid that, you're discussing something very calmly and lovingly, and getting, why are you screaming at me? You know, because they perceive that you're all upset. And if they don't perceive that these things mean a lot to us, we're also in trouble, because then, you know, we've created an atmosphere where we don't really care what you do. So it's a fine balance, but it's extremely important to have this open type of a relationship. If a kid tells you something, and many of our kids have to tell us or should be telling us things that are very, very difficult as parents to listen to, we can't faint, we can't cry, and we can't scream, but we have to be able to roll with the punches and just continue to respect and to love them and to show them trust, even though maybe a trust has been broken. But on the other hand, to, with a certain firmness and a certain conviction, deal with the issues. If we can generate such an atmosphere at home before our kids leave, then there's a much greater chance that they will be open with us, that they will share with us the challenges and the temptations that they're facing and the difficulties that they have, and that we'll be able to, even from the distance, help them and guide them through these things because they have this sense of trust, because they don't feel that they have to hide from us. In our yeshiva, I like to pride myself in the fact that lying is the worst thing in the world. There's no question about it. You know, if a person lies, if a child can lie to you, then you have no idea who you're talking to. You don't know what you're dealing with. It's impossible to deal with. But I like to pride myself that we try to create an atmosphere where nobody is even motivated to lie. There's no need to lie, because we're all on the same page. We're all in this together. We all have challenges. And if you have a problem, we're ready to deal with it. And if we can create that type of an atmosphere, then the chances of success are that much greater. I think that before our kids leave for Israel, they have to be prepped on the level, the dangers or the challenges of freedom. The level of freedom there will be very, very, for the most part, will be much more than they have at home. You know, some kids come and go as they wish, but for most of us, there's some level of knowledge and accountability which they may not have, or they will not have in Israel. And it's important that sometimes they say that the shock just of this ability to do whatever I want, whenever I want, and with maybe almost zero accountability, because really nobody knows what's going on. They have time to go places, they have time to go to town, they have this evening off, they have this day off, they have this weekend off, and it does create a certain opportunity to opportunities to do all sorts of things. So and sometimes just the fact that they've never had this before, they there was never such a thing that at 12 or 1 or 2 or 3 in the morning there's not going to be somebody there calling the police or waiting or constantly, you know, nervous about what I'm doing. And that sometimes can really be like a culture shock to these kids, and they take such advantage of it, they don't even realize what's happening. They get caught up in this freedom and abuse it. So I think it's very important for them and for us to talk about these things before they go, and maybe even to, for those that we feel are overly sheltered, maybe even to give them a taste of some freedom before they go, so that when they get there, it isn't such a shock to them. Of course, the type of freedom that we give has to be according to what we feel we're comfortable with. And I like to look at it as like freedom, more freedom in their time rather than in their behavior, because we don't want our kids to do things that we feel are inappropriate. But at least there shouldn't be this sense of frustration of having been cooped up for all the years, and all of a sudden, the day they get to Israel, like they're free to do whatever they want. And if we can ameliorate that by some additional safe, almost controlled or semi-controlled freedoms, if you will, if it's not an oxymoron, then to that extent that they're focused, that they've experienced a little bit more freedom, that hopefully this will be less devastating to them. But they do have to hear, and they do have to know that there are dangers of not having anyone, not having to be accountable to anyone. The more that we can prepare their mindset before they leave to the dangers of this alleged freedom, or the real freedom, I guess it is, the more that hopefully they'll be able to cope with it. We always try to help our children to make the right choices. But more often than not, when they're at home, we're participating in the process. We're guiding them on a daily basis. We're involved with their issues, with what they're doing in life. It's not as if that they have this whole thing from beginning to end. I got an issue, I have to decide, and I have nobody to talk to, and it happens so quickly without any support or guidance. In Israel, that's what happens. They're going to be out for the evening, and they're going to have to, sometimes they're going to be exposed to issues that are going to force very, very, very harsh and hard choices. And it's a good thing to prepare our children for this. Choices on their own, you know, discussing with them how to make choices in an intelligent way, how not letting themselves to get carried away just with the passion of the moment or the temptation of the moment or the fact that everybody else is doing it. And in their sheltered environment at home, although that's very likely and very often very usual, but there's still some mitigating factors where over there they may not have these factors. So therefore, like, focus and discussion and maybe role-playing, you know, situations where, well, if this happens and this happens, then what are you going to do? And even though sometimes it seems a little bit childish or trite, but it's really very important. The more that they have thought out, the more that they have heard, the more that they have received guidance from their parents as to how to react or how to deal with these different choices that they have, the better the chance that they will be successful in standing up to the pressures. And I think that there's a lesson that maybe is hard to learn, but it's very important to learn. And if we can teach that to our children, it can be very helpful when they're out on their own. And that is the sense of the fulfillment, the satisfaction that a person gets from knowing that they've made the right choice and they've conquered temptation and they haven't given in to foolishness just because everybody's doing it or just because the temptation and the lure is so great. The satisfaction of being in control of myself. You know, as the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Ezehu Gibor HaKoyvish Es Yitzro. There's a strength that a person truly feels and a pride that a person can take in that strength if they know, I had a temptation, I was in a compromising situation, I was very tempted to give in, but I was able to muster the moral fortitude to be able to take control of myself and think of long-term consequences, think of the problems that might develop if I give in to this temptation, think of the disappointment to my parents and so forth and so on. And I was able to control myself and to withstand this temptation. The sense of satisfaction is enormous. And the truth of the matter is, and I've done this experiment many times, if you ask kids about the greatest thrill that they've had, you know, a while back, and then a situation of temptation where they were able to withstand and overcome the temptation, and they will clearly tell you that the thrill is gone and done. You know, it was good while it lasted, but it's all over. But that sense of validation, that sense of feeling good about themselves, that they feel that they were capable of withstanding a test and a challenge, and to be able to act appropriately, this is something that lingers. The validation, the good feeling about oneself lingers. And if our kids learn this and hear this and we prepare them with this, this certainly can be helpful in helping them make the appropriate choices. Something else which is, I think, very, very important. With all due respect to what type of, the level of technology is, but ability to talk to our children by cell phone and maybe even see them by some type of computer connection. So we see their faces, we look at the background. If they're savvy enough, they put a, you know, one of the Universal Studios backgrounds there. But with all due respect to all of that, we may not have any idea of what's really going on over there. And probably old-fashioned but very, very time-tested approaches is to be in touch on a regular basis with the appropriate, knowledgeable people there. In fact, it's good to establish such relationships before our kids leave. If we know, I mean, hopefully we know who to make out the check to, so we know where they're going, we have to establish a contact there, someone who's going to know that we're going to be in touch with them regularly. They should expect a call every third week, once a month, certainly not less than that. And they know, and as human beings, and even educators, machanchim are human beings, that if I'm going to be getting a call on a regular basis from a parent, I'm going to make sure that I know what's going on. And there'll be an extra effort, with all due respect to the sincerity and the dedication and devotion and love that they have, which is all true. But, you know, as a human being who has many charges, it's not always easy to keep on top of every situation. But knowing that this particular parent, and not a nudnik, not a parent who's calling and complaining and bothering them and this, and, you know, but very gently, but just it's a regular thing. It becomes a routine that they know they're getting this call, that such a parent will find that the teachers, the rebbeim, the whoever it may be, the directors, the principals, will be more on top of things. They'll be more knowledgeable as to what's going on. They'll probably develop a closer relationship with our child because of that, because in order to know what's going on, they're going to have to. They're going to know that they're going to have to report, so therefore they have to be aware of what's going on. They don't want to find themselves in an embarrassing situation where they're telling you, oh, great, everything in all the platitudes, and then they find out 2 weeks later what's been going on for the last 3 months, which is a catastrophe. So it's a very good piece of advice. It's something that we should always be doing. It shouldn't be used in a negative way against our children. And I would call them up, oh, but I heard such a thing. And how could, you know, have to be very, very discreet in terms of how to apply this information. But the very fact that we're in touch with someone will give us some real sense of what's going on and will assure that there's someone on the other side of the ocean that's going to spend a little extra time and take a little extra care of our children. Akin to this is something which is, I think, also very important. A lot of the schools that our kids will go to will not are large. They're large classes, and even though they may have a large staff, but the opportunity to have close relationships with their teachers, with their rebbeim, may not be as practical. And therefore, the idea of a mentor is a very, very helpful type of a thing. And that's something which usually the school can help us get in touch with. There happens to be, I think we have some literature there too, about an organization that works with these things. It's called Yedidim. They have a mentoring program. They can be contacted also to help provide such mentors. It's a very good thing because a mentor means a young man or a young woman, a couple of years or, you know, not too many years older, someone who's has his or her life together, their act together, but yet they can relate, and probably oftentimes they relate better to a mentor closer in age than they do to a teacher or to a Rebbe or a an authority figure. And it's a person who would maybe, if they're married people, to invite them over for a Shabbos. If it's a single person, to go out to dinner, to spend a couple of hours together from time to time. Not only to be aware of what they're doing, but more than that, to have a direct influence on them, which can make sometimes all the difference in the world. Also, a mentor can be very good because sometimes a kid needs an outsider to help them navigate the issues that they have with the school. You know, our kids oftentimes do have issues with their schools. Not all the issues come to our attention. Some of them are not that serious. Some of them can get more serious. Some of them escalate. There's different struggles that they go on. You know, they're not exactly doing everything they're supposed to be doing, and the school is getting upset at them, and the teacher, the Rebbe, this and that. There's some friction. There's some conflict. There's some tension. And oftentimes they don't want to make a big deal about it and tell us about it. And maybe the school also will not want to report it because it hasn't escalated to that level. But a mentor there would be able to help them and guide them and sometimes even step in and show the school like a different perspective. Hey, you know, this kid, you think this and this, but the reality is this is what's going on. And so it's a very, very wise thing to have such a situation set up from the very beginning, or at least get it in motion as early as possible, so that when there are issues, it can be helpful. And even when there are not issues, it can serve as a real positive influence, sometimes even beyond that which the school itself is able to do. A couple of things which I think are also significant to mention. If we can help our children before they go to have some very concrete goals about what they want to accomplish, it could be very helpful, because part of the, if you will, hefkerus, you know, this just freedom that they feel, is that they're coming, many of our kids, and you know, we deal with a diverse group here, we deal with a diverse group of kids from all over, different, you know, shades of the spectrum, and therefore it's hard to generalize. But oftentimes they really are not sure. They're going to Israel because everybody goes to Israel, and they don't necessarily know what they're going for. And if that's the case, they really could spend the whole year not doing very much, because if you don't really have a goal, you don't have much to accomplish, so it's sort of a formula for almost for vegetating. So it's very important to have some real and some realistic goals in terms of why they're going there. And just to suggest a couple of things which I think are worthy of our being aware of and maybe finding some way to communicate them with our children. A lot of the kids that go through the yeshiva system here feel that, and here meaning, you know, all across the country, nothing specific about any community, they feel that they've learned, or they're learning, a lot of information, but they don't necessarily have a context to appreciate it all. Like, where's it coming from? What is it all about? Why am I doing this? What's the point of it all? Where is it supposed to get me in life? How is it going to enhance the quality of my living? How is it going to make me happy? How is it going to make my life a better existence? So this is something which sometimes our kids, and I hear this all the time from kids, that they haven't really gotten this message from their yeshiva studies. I think it's important if they go to Israel with that sense of, I want to broaden my religious experience. I want to have a deeper sense of what it's all about. I'm not just continuing to learn information, but I hope to come away with a greater hashkofa, a broader perspective on what Yadus is all about, or what Torah living, Jewish living is all about, what the purpose of life is all about, and what I need in order to build a family of the nature that I would like to build, and to raise children in the direction that I would like to raise them. And I think that focusing them on such goals, and maybe guiding them in terms of picking these up. You know, these are things that are not necessarily going to be discussed in the classroom, although there are many yeshivas and seminaries in Israel that do. But if they're not, this is something that they can pick up in a private session, a private chavrusa with a rebbe, with a teacher. They could pick up in private conversations, spending extra time, getting close to their teachers and, you know, and picking their brain, so to speak, and asking the kinds of questions that they may not have been able to ask before they came to Israel. But I think it's very important that they have this sense of, I have to accomplish something. I'm not just doing more of the same. It's not just another high school experience with a lot more freedom and some, you know, different scenery, but it's something to fulfill, to fill in the gaps in my Torah chinuch, and something which I should be able to come away with feeling strengthened as a Jew and having a greater sense of perspective and what it's all about. I think that's an important goal that they should have. I think that they should realize that there are a lot of very positive Jewish experiences that kids can have there that for some reason they don't feel over here. Many of the yeshiva kids, girls and the boys, get involved meeting families, very interesting families, very, very inspiring families. And, you know, our own family is never too inspiring to us. It's everybody else is always much more influential on us than on our children than we are. That's just the name of the game, so don't be insulted. That's, you know, everybody knows that. But sometimes they meet up with a family. They help out with a family. I know the girls do it a lot. Some of the schools actually have it as part of the curriculum. They help to feed the kids, bathe the kids, I don't know what. But guys can do that too, and there are contacts and there are exposures and there are friends that they could make there that can really inspire them. And a lot of these kids are looking for inspiration. Even those that are admittedly going to Israel only to have fun, deep down they're looking for inspiration as well. In fact, most of them will admit to you the first couple of months, I'm going for the fun. But then after that, and I say if they survive till after that, which is, you know, we have to pray hard to make sure that they do. But then they really, so it's important to guide them in terms of getting on with this inspiration early on. I think it's something that that can be very helpful. I think there's something else that they also should be aware of, and it's a little bit more delicate and maybe painful. A lot of our kids get into trouble because they're looking for something and they really don't know what that something is all about. What do I mean? Ultimately, everybody just wants to be happy. There's nothing more. Nobody wants anything other than to be happy. Nobody wants fame if it's going to bring misery. Nobody wants wealth if it's going to bring misery. Nobody wants anything if it's going to bring misery. They all want to be happy. And yet in a world which is so in the pursuit of happiness, more books have been written about it, more lectures are given about it, more money is spent, you know, in all types of mental health and endeavors to try to bring this about, and yet we live in a generation which seems so unhappy. If the statistics are anywhere, any indication of what's going on, when you take the substance abuse and the suicide rate and the divorce rate and the mental health problems that we have, it doesn't make sense. So much pursuit of happiness, yet so little finding it. And it occurred to me a number of years ago that the reason is very simple. We don't know what it is. If you don't know what it is, you don't know what you're looking for, you can't find it. You can trip on it, you wouldn't even notice it. So I think a definition of happiness is very important, and it's very important to share that with our children and to share it with them before they go, so that if they're going to Israel for a year, which is certainly in pursuit of happiness, they should at least have an idea of what they're looking for, so they should be able to find it. And I think there's no better definition than what we find in the Loshon HaKodesh. You know, Loshon HaKodesh, not the modern Israeli Hebrew necessarily, but the Loshon HaKodesh, the language of the Torah, the language of the Tanakh, the language of HaKodesh Baruch Hu, in that language, it's not an arbitrary language, but the shoresh, the root of the word, describes the essence of the conceptual concept. And a very high form of happiness is osher, spelt with an aleph. Ashrei yoshvei beisecho. David HaMelech said, Acha shoalti meis Hashem, shivti beis Hashem. That's what he wanted, to be beis Hashem. Yoshvei beisecho is the ultimate happiness. What's the shoresh of the word? The shoresh of the word seems to be from ishur, la'asher, to validate. Happiness is about validation. Happiness is about feeling good about myself. The sooner that we communicate this message to our children, and the more that we can do to create situations that allow them to feel good about themselves, the happier our children will be, and the less need for outside stimuli and outside pleasures and outside thrills to fill the void that they feel inside because they're not happy. Because those outside stimuli that they have to take, whether it be a drink or whether it be a drug or whether it be some terrible, dangerous thrill that they may be doing or whatever, but all of those things are really outside influences to compensate for the lack of validation, but they don't validate me at all. In fact, they invalidate me. They make me feel, in the words of the kids, like trash, because I have to take this junk in order to feel temporarily good, and it's not even about myself. I just have relief. It's a relief from my feeling of emptiness. It's a relief from the void. It's a relief from the depression. It's a relief from the pain, and it does nothing for me, and it's not coming from me, so it doesn't really satisfy me. If I need all of these things to feel momentarily good, that means I really don't feel good about myself. So if we can get this lesson across, it's very helpful. And I think it's helpful for another reason too. And that is because for some of our kids, and it depends on who and where, what schools they go to, and what kind of friends they associate with, the threat of the outside intakes in order to compensate for the lack of happiness and to fill the void are very, very serious over there. The freedom with which anybody can go into a bar and drink to his or her heart's desire without any ID, without any accountability, is scary. It's really a pachad. And the availability of drugs. I think the word on the street is that the weed there is so bad. Excuse me if this is not relevant to your children, but this is a tape that, you know, is going out to a lot of people too, but is so bad there that you sort of automatically upgrade to the next level because it's not going to do it for you. You know, so there are dangers there, serious dangers there, and they're available. And there's no parent that's checking up on things and watching the telltale signs. Yes, the yeshivas do and the seminaries do, but harder when you're dealing with 50 or 100 or 200 or 400 kids than if you're dealing with your own kids at home. So it's something that the more that they are aware, and I wouldn't lecture about drugs and drinking per se, but the more that they're aware of using this unique opportunity to find those things that will help validate them and make them feel good about themselves, and have them pursue happiness with the knowledge of what it is, and to succeed and to excel and to accomplish in things that are going to make them feel good about themselves, rather than the outside stimuli that are going to just make them feel bad in the long run, even in the short run. Opportunities to do chesed in Israel abound. Opportunities to do chesed. Chesed is something that really makes people feel good about themselves. It is in a significantly religious context, so that it's not just like doing something on the outside to feel good. It deals with the core of what they're there for. But yet it's not necessarily just book learning and something which may be tedious or too tedious for them. And it changes the pace a little bit. Then there are plenty of opportunities to help there, whether it's families, whether it's younger students, whether it's poor people, whether it's whatever it may be. But to be sensitized that these are the things that make you feel good about yourselves, and feeling good about yourself is really the key to human happiness. Reward and punishment. Two very, one very painful word and the other one very difficult to figure out. I think it's important that we establish certain standards of expectation from our children when they go to Israel. And these expectations have to be appropriately laced with incentive. Incentives. I mean, some people call it bribery. It's nothing wrong with bribery, you know, if it's for a good cause. I mean, if it's legal. But and incentives for our kids can really be very helpful. And if we discuss the expectations that we have, and expectations should not be dictated nor lectured, but negotiated. In other words, let's sit down and talk about what's a realistic expectation that we could hope to accomplish in this year. What are the goals? What are the objectives for the first month, the second month, the third month? What do we want to see? And what are we prepared to give as an incentive to help you? Not because we're, you know, bribing you, and not because we're afraid that you're going to do terrible things, but we're all human. We're all human. We all need incentives. We all get incentives in one way or another. And, you know, what can we, you know, whether you need a little extra spending money, whether you need a little extra something, whatever we could do to make it work. Set the goals, the expectations, realistic ones, and encourage them with incentives. At the same time, though, there have to be consequences. I'm not very personally very big on the consequences part, because the consequences are very complicated things, and they're really more about teaching than they are about punishing. And that's a big mistake that we make. In fact, the word for punishment, yisurim, seems to come from the same root as musar, which is really a teaching of what's right and wrong. And the punishments, Chazal say that gedola hasoras hatabas yisurim memches neviim, that when Achashverosh took off his ring to give to Haman, it taught Klal Yisrael more than the 48 prophets taught. And the prophets taught us what we were supposed to do, what's right and what's wrong. They were not the executors of punishment. They were the teachers and the guiders of Klal Yisrael. And so, too, it's a guiding thing rather than a punishing thing. But sometimes we need that type of guidance. Sometimes it's only something a little bit harsher, which can wake up our children. So that's something also that should be very clear, that if there's going to be certain problems that occur, if we're going to find out that, and it is good to watch your credit card bills, that's some very sage advice that everybody gives, and watch it with a sophisticated eye, because there are many ways to, you know, I see some people are aware of that. So, But when things are not the way they should be, then sometimes they have to understand, well, then we're not going to be able to provide you if you seem to be going to the Citadel every weekend, you know, and racking up a charge of, I don't know, what is it, $200 a night for a room, and forget all the room service and the bar service and whatever, then we're just not going to have those funds available. Whether we use the, you know, whatever method of funding we use, there are ways to restrict it. But that's something that I think also, and whatever is discussed before, as consequences almost, but as choices. In other words, this is it. If this is going to happen, this is what we're going to have to do. So it's your choice. So it's not a punishment, and it's not even a real consequence. It's a choice, because you know up front that these things are not going to be tolerated. I think it makes life a lot easier. There's another point which can sometimes be very helpful, and that is networking with other parents. It's good if you know other parents, other kids that are going together with your child to this particular same, usually it's better even the same school, if not, it's also sometimes relevant. And to be in touch with them, and to, you know, not to appear as a spy, you know, that your kid will not like, but just to know what's going on. Sometimes from another kid's parent, you know, the other kid will say to his parent things about your kid that your kid might not say to you, and vice versa. And you pick up an idea, or you hear in general, how's the school going and what's happening there and how are the teachers and how are the kids happy there, and they're having a good year, or they're having a lot of problems, or what's, you know, you get a sense. And this sometimes gives us also a broader perspective of what's going on. If you know the parents before, it's very good. Sometimes at the airport you meet parents, and it's good to take their numbers down right on the spot and forge a relationship. And other times, maybe you have to work through the school to get to know some, you know, maybe you have somebody, you could ask them if there's anyone in our community that they have another kid from there that you're not aware of. Maybe you get the number, things like that. But I think it's a very very beneficial type of a thing, and it gives us another sense of what's going on and what maybe we could do about it. It's very important to be in communication with our children. We have to give them a lot of attention when they're in Israel. They sound like they don't want to have anything to do with us, except, you know, when they need money. But the reality is they're lonely. They're probably, they've probably receded somewhat in their maturity as they go into a new strange land with a strange language, with new people, left the security of home and of their community. And there's nothing that they really appreciate more is that really our love and our attention. Now, they call sometimes at the worst times. You know, you're right in the middle of an important meeting. You're right in the middle of a crisis. You're right in the middle of... Now, we can always do it, but as far as they're concerned, when you don't have time to talk to me, that is rejection. You don't care. Now, you know, if it happens once, but 20 times when they call, you're right there for them, maybe they'll understand. But if it happens often, then they get this message, I'm away, my parents forgotten about me, they're pretending everything is okay, their mind is off me, their heart is off me. And that in itself is a formula and a motivation for Tzoras. That in itself can cause and certainly enhance more difficulty and more inappropriate behavior than anything else. So it's very, very important. Believe it or not, I don't think anybody does it anymore, but kids love to get letters, you know, because I don't know why exactly. I mean, but even though they just talk to you this morning, or they're usually 3-4 times a day sometimes, especially if you forgot to wire the money, but, you know, a letter, some pictures, something's going on, it's amazing. You're far away and you just want to be in touch. And you'll find, I mean, I found it with my kids, that the kids who seem, when they hear, so disinterested in the family and so disinterested in their new niece or their new nephew or the upcoming simcha or something else, all of a sudden from the distance, they're banking. They're homesick. They want to be in touch. And it's very important, because the more they feel part of the family, the more they feel close, even from the distance, the more the distance allows them to feel or maybe even to appreciate the closeness that we have. You know, it's when you can't give them a kiss goodnight or a hug or something like this, then there needs to be a deeper expression of closeness and of love. And once they start feeling those things, I think it makes a lot of difference in terms of how they will perform, of how they will not want to disappoint us, of how they will stick to the agreements and the arrangements that we've made. And it's not only taking their phone calls, but it's calling them. And it's not only calling them when we suspect trouble, and it's not just calling them to say, just wanted to say good Shabbos, goodbye, but it's like I missed you, just wanted to talk to you. You know, and... you know, many times I say, I have no time to talk to you right now. Don't be insulted. That's what they want. They'd rather you call and they have no time to talk to you. But it's important. It makes a difference. And if we maintain that bond, and if we we can remain connected with them, and communicate that love and that caring, it makes all the difference in the world. I think these are just some of the ideas which might be helpful in this critical, difficult time of a year in Israel. It does not in any way go into the process of making a decision as to what is the best school for our child. That's a very, very difficult, very, very difficult. That requires a lot of research, a good, I don't know if it's a little too late for this year, but a good piece of advice in that area is, a number of parents do this, is visiting Israel the year before, oftentimes with your son or daughter, and going around to a number of schools and getting a real sense. Because when they come here, they talk, if they got an Israel night or if they have some type of a presentation of this, they all sound great. You know, everybody is wonderful and everybody has beautiful brochures. And today we live in a world that marketing is the name of the game. But if you get there yourself and you see what's going on and you talk to the kids and you talk to the teachers and you can really get a much better sense. And your kid, too, if you can do it together, gets a real sense of what's going on. That's a big blessing. I would just like to, before we, end this, just like to mention just one other thing, and that is that what happens when they come back? So I know there have been books written about it, and everybody's talking about it, but it is really an issue, and I think that it's very important that when our kids come back, that we make every attempt to solidify the growth that they've made in Israel, rather than to, sometimes ignore it or sometimes even to undermine it. I think that it's wrong, it's bad for our kids to feel that Israel is a stage that they went through, and now they're, coming back to earth and they're going to act normal, after this experience. And then the experience becomes something of a memory. It's always good to know that there was that experience, but it really doesn't have that much to do with my daily existence. That's really a mistake because, and I really just, forgive me, but if anyone is judging the world that their children are growing up today by the world that they grew up in, they're living in the dark ages. We miss the point. The generation gap skips from 3 to 5 generations in every generation today. What you knew and saw and did in high school has nothing to do with the world in which your kids are growing up. And that's very important. And therefore, our kids need more than we had. They need greater strength. They have to be able to draw on that strength for the rest of their lives. They're growing up in a world which is constantly challenging that strength, which is distracting them from any commitments that they have, which is undermining any sense of values and commitment and even meaning and purpose in life. It's devastating. And unless the strength, the inspiration that they got in Israel is internalized to become part of their foundation of their future, they're not even going to make it to the level that their parents have made it, and therefore we might think, oh, they'll be just like they won't be. No kid without extra effort is going to be the way the parents were, because their parents grew up in a much more normal world. Okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority-one.org. That's priority-1.org, where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.